If folks could take their seats, we'll go ahead and begin. I want to welcome everybody. We have many guests today, which we're delighted about. But before we start our meeting, I'd ask for unanimous consent that we approve the agenda. Okay, so moved. And then could we have unanimous consent on the approval of the minutes? Everybody good with that? That's great. So I'm looking for our jurisdictional friends. I thought they were here. Andy, and you guys have spots at this. Okay. Today is another step on our journey, our governance journey, and I'm delighted that we have with us today two representatives from the Board of Trade and COG Group, Dave Robertson and Jim Dinegar, as well as representatives from the Governance Working Group, Andy Scott, Michael Harris, and Steve Strauss. And our purpose today is to get some feedback on the work that we, the board, has been doing on governance. So I want to set the stage a little bit, and then we'll turn it over to the others to set the stage as well. As most people in the community know, and all of us in this room know, the board has been working through a number of issues related to governance, and governance really is the framework that we use to define how we do our work, what our major relationships are, and how we interact with the public. And we've been drafting bylaws, which we put out for public comment recently. And the analogy I use is bylaws are kind of written in concrete, and procedures are written in erasable ink. And so the bylaws need to stand the test of time, and the procedures get adjusted as circumstances change and technologies become available and board members' preferences about how we do our work as the board members change. But that major framework stays together for quite a while. So both the bylaws and the procedures are out, and we're gathering our comment today. The board is also working on a code of ethics, an update to what used to be called the standards of conduct, and we'll come back to those in 2 weeks. Also on the board's horizon is the beginning of what I think will be a robust strategic planning process. We're going to start that the middle of June. We have two sessions scheduled, and I think more to come beyond that. So I think to summarize what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about what's in the bylaws and the procedures. And we all agree that there are some issues related to the compact that are beyond this WMATA board's ability to directly address in the ways that some have suggested we do. We have tried, where possible, to go at them a little sideways, I guess is how I would say it. So we've looked at the term of the chair, which by the compact the chair must be elected every year, and we've removed from the procedures a requirement that the chair rotate annually. We've also looked at the role of the jurisdictional veto, which is a strong tool in the compact, I think, set in place to help us all work together collaboratively and not disadvantage any of the jurisdictions involved. We have in our procedures and in our bylaws indicated that the chair should receive notice and that there should be a process around the use of the veto. We cannot limit its use in our practice. We've also talked considerably about the alternates, the role of alternates, something that I think this board has come in its formation to feel strongly that there is an important role for alternates, particularly given the number of jurisdictions that are involved in the compact who have fiduciary responsibility. The need for more voices at the table is still, in our view, important. We have provided some clarity around the role. And we can't address appointment methods or qualifications of members or term limits or any of those things. That's to the appointing authorities. It's not to this board. So we won't be talking about those things, I don't think. But we have spent a lot of time thinking about our role, thinking about our relationship to the CEO, trying to write that down in a clear manner. And we have also spent a lot of time thinking about how we interact with the public, tools we might use beyond what we currently do to pull folks together and get that voice at in our decision-making in a more orderly manner. We view ourselves as a board that has incredible oversight responsibility, as a board that gives policy direction, and as a board that sets the tone and the direction for the agency. And we are moving in a direction which will allow us, I believe, to govern in that manner. So with all of that being said, I would like to invite our partners to give us whatever context setting they envision. We'll start with our governance working group, which is the mayor of D.C., representatives of the mayor of D.C., and the two governors of Maryland and Virginia. So, Andy, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chairman Hines. It's a pleasure to be here this morning on behalf of the governance working group. You introduced my colleagues, but just to repeat, Steve Strauss is with the D.C. Department of Transportation, and Mike Harris is with the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation, and I'm with the Maryland Department of Transportation. And this is, just to emphasize, a regional effort on governance. We want to open by thanking the board for their efforts on governance, the creation of this committee, and all the hard work that's gone into developing the draft bylaws. We also particularly want to thank the two chairs, the chair of the board and chair of the committee. We've been in contact with you about our activities and in communication, and we appreciate the opportunity to speak today. We also appreciate that you recognize that this is we all have shared interests in improving the governance of WMATA, and it's appropriate to coordinate and collaborate where we can. So today we agreed it would be a good opportunity to brief you on what we're doing, not to get into the details of our recommendations, but also provide some comment on the bylaws. You gave a little bit of background on the governance working group. That was created directly as a result of the work of the Board of Trade and the Council of Governments. Following the issuance of that report, the two governors and mayor got together, and you know, they shared the concerns about some of the governance issues raised and really thought it required a regional response. And they tasked their transportation secretaries and transportation director in D.C. with coming up with an implementation plan and schedule. That is, there's a summary of that which should be before you. Just a very high-level summary. We have the report available for distribution if anyone's interested. But just to explain how that is, how we're approaching this, there are clearly items recommended by the Board of Trade and COG that are compact issue related. And then there are some items that don't require legislation. So we've really took the approach of breaking the two apart. We deliberately have held off on getting into compact amendments and legislation until the completion of another effort that's out there. That's a GAO report that's been requested by the congressional delegation. If we are to do compact amendments, we don't need just consensus among the three signatories, but also Congress, because they would need to pass any amendments. We felt it was appropriate. They are looking to this this report to inform their view of the issues and their appropriate responses. So we're holding off on specific recommendations until we see that due by the end of June. So in the meantime, we focused on the things that can be done that don't require legislation, and those are spelled out in on that box, some of the recommendations that we were going to make. In all candor, when we put this together, it was really not clear what the WMATA Board of Directors would do on governance following that report. And so, you know, we put this together thinking that we might have to do a lot of it ourselves. Fortunately, you have done a great deal of work that are reflected in the bylaws. So in some cases, our recommendations may just be to endorse recommendations in the bylaws. So that is really where we're at. Just a couple other quick things. We, in putting together our sort of interim report, we have drafted support from the Council of Governments, since they are familiar with a lot of the best practices, just to give us more research. That's available. It was done for our benefit, but it may be of interest to the committee as well. And finally, our interim report, it will be available in the next few weeks for public comment, and we'll share it with the members. I don't know if you'll weigh in collectively, but you may individually, but we'll definitely share that with the committee so you're aware of what we're doing. As far as the bylaws, just a couple quick things. This wasn't something we set out to do as part of our scope of work, but since you put them out for comment, we're very pleased to see them, and I thought it would be helpful to us to provide some regional perspective or jurisdictional perspective on it. It's a really thoughtful, earnest effort. We really applaud the hard work that you guys have done. We've seen the meetings here, and you've done a lot of work. We're not going to go through point by point, but just to raise a couple issues that might be worthy of discussion. From our perspective, strategic planning, the budget process, and public input, which Steve will speak to. As far as strategic planning, yep, we were aware that you were undertaking this strategic planning initiative. Very happy to see that. The reason why we want to bring it up in the context of the bylaws, there are a few reasons. We do see this as important to governance, for one, that it's going to help focus the board on establishing policy, regional policy. It's going to help you align with staff and stakeholders and aid in decision-making, of course. But in the case of WMATA, it also helps if you truly have a plan that has regional consensus and buy-in, to provide some continuity in policy direction that lasts beyond the term of a chair or other board members. But as far as why we think the bylaws need to be a little more specific about this requirement, we've seen strategic planning efforts started in the past, here at WMATA, and not come to fruition. And so we think it's important that the board acknowledge that this is part of how you do business, that it's not a one-time check-the-box type of effort, but it's truly tied to your capital programming process, your operating budget, your performance measures, your communication to stakeholders. So there are a lot of pieces that you guys have, the agency as a whole has worked on that are really positive, but it's a matter of tying all that together and making it part of your business practices. So we're recommending that there be some specific maybe deadlines or time frames that are explicit in the bylaws, something akin to we have requirements, the state of Maryland, for instance, we call it management for results, but it's actually in law. So we think it's important that you establish that this is going to be something that WMATA should do even beyond this board, but in future boards. Written in concrete, it's important, but not in the compact, which is maybe etched in stone, but it is important and ought to be reflected. Then a couple other quick things. As far as the budget process, the board does have responsibility for approving the budget. We're recommending that the board also approve a budget, an annual budget process that has key milestones where the jurisdictions would interact with the agency or the board would provide guidance. But spelling it out over as an annual process to help you will help facilitate a budget process where at the end of it the board is focused on policy and not sort of the mechanics of trying to cobble together consensus at the last minute. And then the one last piece is a multi-year financial plan which projects out operating and capital expenses. We think this is something that's it's important for the board to require and endorse on an annual basis, so that there is a high level of consensus in the document you know, it is going to require back and forth with the jurisdictions because you're a subsidized agency. It's not going to be easy, but we think it's something that you ought to require and do. That concludes my remarks, and I'll just turn it over to Steve, who's going to talk a little bit about the public input process.
Thank you very much, Andy. The working group is very happy with the direction that the governance committee has been taking on improving communications with the public. This was a key area of concern that we heard from the RAC, and the RAC put together a fairly detailed review of their thoughts on governance at the start of this process, and we've also heard from other advocacy groups. You've taken the initiative to open up the providing a public speaking process at committee meetings, and that was a high priority with some of the advocates, and also eliminating the three-month rule on public speakers. Those were both positive steps. And I think the other issue was that there was a good discussion of the board members' role in the communications process with riders. Board members realized that riders think it's very important that you know about their positive and their negative experiences in the transit system, but that also it's primarily the staff's responsibility to also get these complaints or these comments and to respond to them, and they have a responsibility to respond to them as well and then keep you informed as to how they're communicating back to the riders. So you need to hear about riders' opinions on policy and also on service, but ultimately it's management's responsibility to respond to those. So we're very happy and with the public communications aspects. There may be a few more that come out as we get more comments from other groups about the procedures and the bylaws. One small technical thing is on the public comments, we may have to think about a slightly different procedure for the first meeting of the current procedures say that the sign-up list will be available at 9 a.m. That may not work for the meetings that start at 9 a.m., so it's just a little technical correction we need to adjust. And then a related issue somewhat is the concerns that the working group has on executive session. And again, the governance committee has had some discussions about that. In looking at this, I think the representatives of each of the jurisdictions feel that that the rules for executive sessions and what's permissible to discuss in executive sessions for WMATA are somewhat broader than what is allowed under the open meeting laws of the three jurisdictions. So we would urge the governance committee to work with the legal staff, take a look at the open meetings laws from the local jurisdictions and see if there's a need to tighten up some of the rules here for WMATA's procedures. We wanted to call attention to the mandatory certification of the executive session agenda and the necessity of having an executive session that is called for in Section 6, Paragraph B of the procedures that basically requires the board to publicly acknowledge that what you discussed in an executive session was permissible and that you only discussed what was on the agenda. And then we also would like to go one step further and make a suggestion that for items that are on a board or committee public agenda that's been published, and then if an executive session discusses one of those items on the agenda, that any removal of an item from an already published board or committee agenda take place in a public session. There was an instance fairly recently where an item was discussed at a committee meeting, there was an executive session, and then that item disappeared or was taken off of a board committee without any public recognition of there had been an executive session action that resulted in that. So those are the kind of things where we think there's areas to tighten up the procedures and make it a little more transparent as to what's going on. I mean, we certainly recognize there are things that need to be discussed in executive session for legal purposes, for contract negotiations, real estate transactions, but we think there's room to make this a little tighter and to also give a little more information about what is the topic at the executive session. I think that's pretty much all that I want to cover at this point. But again, we think things are going for the items that are within the board's ability to make adjustments. We're very pleased with the progress so far.
We are very pleased. That does conclude our remarks. I know there will be some discussion after other speakers, but we will be providing written comments on the bylaws.
Right.
Thank you.
Ms. Hutchins, did you have a – they're going to go first. Okay, yes. Yeah, so let me invite now Dave Robertson from COG and Jim Dinegar from the Board of Trade to provide their comments or their context study.
Great. Thank you so much, Chairman Hines, Chairman Hutchins, and members of the WMATA board. Mr. Dinegar and I are here as spokespersons for the joint task force that the Council of Governments and the Board of Trade convened in 2010. The report was released in November of last year, and we're very proud of that work. We think it's been a helpful catalyst to the discussions that now you are having, and that's exactly what I think the task force aspired to do, is to create an environment where public officials, business leaders, state officials, local officials reengage and recommit ultimately to that very success that we call WMATA. And so we thank you for taking these very important steps forward. What we're going to do, Jim and I, is just highlight some of the areas where we're very excited about progress and point out a couple of areas where there's still open questions. And in your own opening comments, you highlighted a couple of those already, so we'll obviously have an opportunity for further discussion. We also know that there are issues out there. The governor's group, I think, is going to be a very important partner in this, and we're eager to hear their recommendations going forward. But I think we can acknowledge that there's some activities underway that provide great promise for the work. The first is defining the role of the general manager as the chief executive officer. The task force was very strong about that in the report and recommendations. And while some might think that's just a job title or job label, I think it that belies, I think, the real heart of the matter, which is making sure that in the functioning of this organization that the general manager or the chief executive officer does have the day-to-day management responsibility and has the full confidence of the board that sets the broad policy and then allows the manager to execute that. We also concluded that the custom of rotating officers among the jurisdictions, and I come from a place that actually does that, and so it might seem a little hypocritical to say that, but I think the Council of Governments is a different organization than the WMATA. We are not a multi-billion-dollar operating agency. We have different roles and responsibilities, and the ability to sort of stay the course, set the policy, and execute may take more than 1 year to achieve all that needs to be achieved. And so we think that's, the task force thinks that's important as well. And certainly creating a governance committee was one of the chief recommendations of the task force. And the fact that the board responded so quickly and aggressively and has really put a lot of time and vigor into this effort, again, is to the credit. We're specifically pleased that Articles 2 of the draft bylaws identifies the board's responsibilities, and Article 3 defines the chair's responsibilities. The task force concluded that there was some overlap. There were some areas of not just lack of clarity, but perhaps gaps. I think that is probably the greater risk, is not that there's overlap, that two entities are doing the same thing. That opens up opportunities for confusion, but the greater risk is that neither group is doing it, and then that's a gap. So clarifying that is one of our task force goals and objectives, and you're moving clearly in that direction. Article 12 of the bylaws formalizes the WMATA governance committee structure, including standing committees, and again, the activity that you're about today, which is bylaws, rules of procedures, and we understand ethics documentation will be going forward shortly. Again, that's all to the good. We're also, through the task force, pleased that Article 12 gives the governance committee responsibility for overseeing board orientation or onboarding or however you choose to define it. I know there have been some folks through the task force process and through your own process that have harkened back to things that WMATA did in the past, the Airlie Conference and other things. And it doesn't matter where you have it or what you call it, but that there is a rigorous and regular process for engaging your leadership, your top staff, the board leadership, and the committees for a focusing enterprise, and that that happen on an ongoing basis when new folks come in, where you set the agenda for the year. And it doesn't mean you don't change things from time to time, because things do change, but that there's this opportunity to step back before you leap forward, and we think that that is defined fairly well in your bylaws. There are, of course, some areas that weren't as well developed in the draft bylaw documents as what was lined up in the task force report. And the chair indicated that some of those may fall to signatories or compact jurisdictions. And we, having gone through this enterprise through the task force, understand the delineation of responsibilities between what the board can do and what the mayor and the two governors can do and what the folks that are the appointing authorities, such as the District of Columbia and the TA and others. So, but there are some areas that we think ought to stay on the table for further discussion, either as part of this bylaws process, where the bylaws can be an advocate, even though it may not be within your authority to execute that action. If you feel it's important that the mayor and the two governors move in that direction, I think that's an opportunity as well. The first is the issue of alternates, and again, Chairman Hines, you touched on that. The task force did find that the way in which this body and this organization is aligned with members and alternates is a bit of an anomaly compared to some other organizations. I understand the uniqueness of the National Capital Region all too well, and certainly everybody on the task force does, but we felt that that is one where additional thought and examination is warranted. The second area of additional thought, perhaps, is in the issue of the veto. And again, I think the documentation that you have in Article 8, I think, makes some progress in that area. But the task force did conclude that it felt that even the threat of the veto and the way in which it used was counterproductive to the regional aspirations that you're trying to lay out for this organization. And the other issue that I believe was in Article 3 is the issue of the second vice chair. It seemed a bit a holdover from the rotation piece in that everybody sort of has a slice of the pie. And that one, again, may warrant some additional examination as you move forward. Finally, and I'll kick it over to Jim for some additional comments, we're very gratified that the mayor and the two governors responded as quickly and as aggressively as they did in responding not just to the joint task force report that COG and Board of Trade sponsored and organized, but the work of the general manager, the work of this board, the Writers Advisory Council. We think that issue of having high-level, state-level engagement on this issue is central. One of the things that was called for in the task force is this notion of a sort of a commission or governance enterprise, and I think one of the things that may have gotten lost in the translation a bit is that we never intended the task force that that was going to be an organization, but that there was a firm commitment on the part of the mayor and the two governors not to just engage this right now, but to engage this issue on a sustained basis in partnership with the WMATA board, in a partnership with the appointing authorities and other groups. So bottom line, from the perspective of the task force, and we did try and stay fairly narrowly in the lane of which we spoke. The task force spoke, and I think fairly clearly and persuasively on several items, but there are a number of issues that were touched on by the governor's representatives, public participation, others that the task force really didn't weigh in too much on. And so we tried to speak to what we did and not have mission creep too much, because that's always a risk, but to speak affirmatively on the things that have moved forward, and then to put a question mark out there for areas where additional thought and examination may be required. But let me turn it over to Jim, and we'll be available, I suspect, for questions.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much for your attention this morning, but most importantly, thank you for all of the time and effort you put into creating bylaws. A few years down the road, you'll have new members of the board who come on, and they won't remember a time when Metro didn't have bylaws. And I think it's remarkable to look at what has been incorporated into the different issues associated with running this system. So when we undertook this joint effort to create a task force to address the governance of WMATA. We brought together a number of different experts to really just sort of look through as much of the best practices around the country as possible to share our best thoughts with you. And we're gratified with what you've taken and done with it. You've come a really long way. And as Dave said, and then I think the others have said, there are a couple of adjustments and tweaks, but really we also appreciate and realize that there is an approach that is bylaw related, and then you have the code of ethics, you have the policies and procedures, and on top of that or alongside that, you'll have the compact changes. I would like to address a couple of the issues because they're in sort of a gray area, but right at the start for the bylaws that are proposed in Article 1, you immediately go into the board of directors, all principal and alternate member or alternate directors, here and after board or board members. And it causes a concern because it all of a sudden makes alternate members board members. And in fact, it's opposite of what the compact currently says. Our recommendation was actually to restore the role of the alternate. That essentially is that when a board member is not able to attend and participate, that the alternate then takes his or her place. This actually immediately elevates the alternate members to board members, as we understand it, and would ask for some special consideration on that. And then, of course, as it comes up on the compact, it would be further addressed. And we realized that in a two-phased approach, where we had said the alternate recommended that the alternate members become back to their original role as alternate. There's been a bit of scope creep. And then when it gets addressed in the compact changes from the two governors and the mayor, our recommendation then was that the alternates become three board members instead of four altogether, but three full voting members of the board. And so it would expand the board, but it wouldn't immediately double the size of the board as we understand Article 1. Beyond that, we appreciate the regional approach, the regional mindset of this. We think it goes a long way to restoring confidence in WMATA's governance, but in Metro overall. And that was a concern. It was really what brought the Greater Washington Board of Trade, the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments to the table as it relates to creating this task force, is that the confidence in WMATA, the crown jewel of this region, had been slipping. And we really do commend all of your time and attention to help restore that confidence. We really do think you're on the right path, and we look forward to continuing to provide you any and all assistance that you may need. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Really appreciate it. I'd like to turn it over to Kathy Hudgens.
I just wanted to make a few comments because I just wanted to also be a part of the setting of the stage of what we're doing here today, because I think it is a reflection of where I think the WMATA board is at this time. And just to harken back just a bit to the fact that when the board received this report, I think there was a first attempt to say, let's respond, and then the attempt to say, no, we really do, if we're going to take seriously what has been said, an opportunity to more deliberatively review and respond and act from this report, and as well as the writer's advisory. And I think that's really what's been done, and I really appreciate the comments here today. I want to acknowledge the role of Ms. Hines in being able to shepherd this effort, as well as the participation of the board, because I think the fact that the task force recommendations really provided an opportunity, and it truly is an opportunity to convey a sense of confidence about what happens with WMATA, and that consistency is going to be seen. And I think it was first stated when the governance committee was created, that it was clearly an opportunity to put an institutional framework on how and where we will do the business of monitoring and focusing on our policy. We've been fortunate with the work for the CEO and WMATA's actions at that time in terms of defining that role and how we would work together and confirming that through the hiring. And so this is an opportunity that I think we all looked for as we saw that report, to really have the conversation we're having today. That is that now the work of the governance committee has begun and is coming to an end. But before doing that, to really work with you who provided the report information and be able to discuss that in a way that pretty much can help frame what the final document can be and how you've been able to contribute to that. So I think that's very important, and I'm going to look around the room and indicate that you have a new board that you're talking to versus when you released your report, and I'm going to acknowledge the most recent member, Ms. Artis Hampshire Cohen, that was probably has signed her oath today and is ready to be a participant. She's been in attendance a couple of times, and welcome her. But welcome all of those new board members because, frankly, they have provided a great deal of very good, informative, encouraging, and guided information in terms of us getting through this process. So I just wanted to make sure that we had that comment.
Thanks, Kathy, and I would be remiss if I didn't also say that Kathy Porter from Montgomery and I spend about an hour and a half with the RAC at their meeting this month, and we are on track to go visit the Accessibility Advisory Committee and do a similar conversation in June. So it's not convenient for them to come on a Thursday morning, and so we decided best to go to them and have the opportunity to hear from all of them, and many excellent suggestions about ways to streamline our conversation with them and the general public. So we were blessed to do that as well. So I think that what I'd like to do, if I could at this point, unless there's any other board member who specifically wants to do a context-setting comment right now, is I'd like to turn to two sections where and see if there are any more specific things that folks want to share with us. And actually, I'm going to add in Article 1, which Jim just noted, where we do basically say that when we use the term the board in the context of the bylaws, we have defined it as both board principal members and alternates. Part of that was done because we got confused and we were having to write so many other words. And in general, as you know, we do operate with our alternates. But I think that issue bears some conversation because we had a pretty robust conversation here about it for you to understand where we come from. And then the Article 2 and 3, which are the roles and responsibilities of the board members and of the board leadership, in particular the chair, any questions you might have or any places you think we ought to sharpen language, we would greatly appreciate that. And then after we do those, I would then turn to Article 7, which is communication with the public, in case you have any more specific things there or questions about what we've written. We're happy to entertain those. So I think it would be good for us colleagues to share a little bit of the conversation we had around the role of the alternates to just deal with that directly. And I'm looking at Mr. McKay and Mr. Yule, who are probably the longest serving, and Mr. Giancola, who are the longest serving. They're our longest serving alternates, but they, yeah. Okay. So can I ask one of you guys to sort of share some of the thinking? I think they were deferring to you, Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the representatives from both COG and the Board of Trade. I have been in an alternate role for my 11 years on the board and certainly have found it very valuable and a positive task. I've had my staff take a look at it, as well as our city council have discussed the governance process, the bylaws, and everything else. And it's still our conclusion that alternate members play, once again, a vital role, and that the role needs to continue, and that we should be part of the, that we should, as we tend to participate in committee meetings, that we should have a vote, and that we should always be welcome to the meetings. There's so much that happens here that takes place, and that you can't be in an alternate position and attend a meeting you know, in terms of subbing or an absence of the voting member, one meeting, and then you don't come for two or three meetings, and then the expectation is you show up again to sub, you, despite the fact that you get all the materials and everything else. But as fate would have it, you know, if you know that you don't need to be somewhere, you're not going to waste your time reading materials because we have other jobs and tasks to do. I know the structure we have at COG, and it probably works well. I will say that at least my alternate to me at COG, at the COG board, is someone that is very active and does read all the materials and is on top of the issues. But I think the position that this board has taken relative to the alternates is a good one, and we should maintain it.
Yes, Mayor Yule did summarize it quite nicely. I think to be asked to come in and substitute for a voting member without any knowledge of what's going on, recognizing we do get the reading material, but the interactions at the committees and such is invaluable. In fact, in my case, and I think in Mayor Yule and Mr. McKay's case, we actually participated very actively on some of the subcommittees, which will now be part of the main committees, the technology subcommittee, and then the audits and investigations. There's just too much information that's out there, and you have to be knowledgeable when you come in to vote for a voting member. Now, in that case, you know, I shifted over from an alternate in the District of Columbia to now a federal alternate. While I was an alternate in the District of Columbia, there were many occasions where, in fact, I was the voting member. And so that was very actively used there. So having that knowledge, having the intimacy of the committee meetings and the working relationship with staff, general manager, and the key staff was very important to me as an alternate member. So certainly, while I don't necessarily disagree with the ultimate goal of the Board of Trade and COG with regard to making everyone a voting member and reducing the numbers, I still think if we're going to continue with the present structure, the alternates need to be actively engaged in the process.
Mr. McKay.
Yeah, I will agree with those comments, although I will say that I understand the reason behind the recommendation, and I think as Mr. Giancola finished his comments, I think it's important to put what we're doing in the context of what the board has the authority to do. And we made a decision, and you've acknowledged it in your early comments about the size, scope, and magnitude of this organization. We made a decision as a board that if you're an alternate, you ought to be expected to attend all the meetings, to vote on items in the committee, to play a vital role in this organization, because there may be a time where something goes to the board and you're needed to vote. And, you know, I understand the point of what's put out, but I also know that within the confines of the compact and the operating procedures of this organization, it's long been known that alternates play a very vital role. If you were to elevate alternates to voting members, I think that's something that, you know, would have to be done, in my opinion, is something that would have to be done as a compact change. And the reason I say that is because I think there's not the amount of clarity that one might expect in the role of the alternate in the compact that says this is specifically what that person has to do or has not to do. And I don't think you're going to have valuable alternates in our current structure unless they play a vital role in the board and vote on all items of the committee for the reasons that Mr. Yule stated. And so I don't want to prejudge the opportunity for a compact change that says this is how many permanent principal members you'll have, and you're going to eliminate alternates as a possibility. That may be in the long-term best interest of the organization, but what's in the best interest of the organization today, absent that direction officially in the compact, is to have those alternate members play a full participatory role in the board. And I don't think you can do that without the expectation that you attend, participate, and play a role in all committee meetings, that you can attend and participate in board meetings without voting. One of the things that most people outside the organization don't realize is that the vast majority of the work here happens at the committee level. And once it goes to the board level, alternates, just like board members, have an opportunity to shape the final item that goes to the board. And normally, that item doesn't change when it gets to the board level, and so the alternates feel compelled absolutely to participate and feel like they have an opportunity to shape items that ultimately the full board acts on. And so I just want to draw that distinction between what we do today and what we feel like we have to do today versus what you're looking at, which is what in the long term is in the best interest of WMATA. We're not at the same place today in what might be in the long-term interest, but we have to operate under the compact as we see it today and make that interpretation.
Mr. Downey.
Yeah, I just want to speak up for the role of the alternates, especially at the committee level, where the main discussions go forward, where the main decisions leading to board action are established, and having the alternates participating gives a much broader perspective that I think is important to have regionally consistent and accepted terms. I would also hope at some point that the committees would become smaller. It would be very difficult to then represent the interests that are there on those committees unless we could reach into the alternates to fill some of those slots. But were the compact to change, I think those same considerations of input from all of the regions and workload of the members should be taken into account. But given what we have now, I think we have a very workable arrangement.
Anyone else? Ms. Hudgens.
I was just going to kind of go to Mr. Downey's point, and I always try and hearken back why compact says what it says and what were they intending at the time. And I think a continuity, because of the regional manner that this was structured, it was, to me, a consistency piece that they were going to. And I think over years it evolved to being more of that because, as the system built out, the voices spread it further. And I think what it has done is to maintain and continue to populate the conversation at the board on a broad regional level, rather than narrowing that part. So I think that the ability to utilize all of those voices has been a benefit, and having sat in the seat as an alternate for a period of time, you really note that that participation role is critical, and that it harkens to responsibility and accountability. So the size of the board may be the real question that one may want to look to and how to maintain that. But I think it plays a very important role here if we look at the uniqueness of the WMATA structure versus other transit properties.
Mr. Nichols.
Thank you very much. Two quick points in addition to the comments that have been made, and I'm fully supportive of all of those that have been made, and particularly I want to thank both the Tri-State as well as the Board of Trade and COG for their reports, because they really bring a lot of context and focus. For me, as a relatively new member, I'll start to insert relative in front of the new.
Way to go.
But it is all of maybe, was it 6 weeks now? Relatively new expert then. That's where I am. But when I joined the board, much of the governance work was far along, and I want to thank Chairwoman Hines for that, for the work and the committee has done, because they've done an enormous amount of work in grabbing something that needed to be grabbed very hard and putting some shape and focus around it. So I want to thank them for the work that they did before many of us joined the board. We recognize that we are very much in I'll call it a transitional state, simply because there's so many new members of the board. And for that reason alone, I think the full engagement of everyone here is quite important. And I think the chairwoman has made, for example, all the committees right now, committees of the whole, which from a time standpoint has been burdensome, candidly. And we've invested a lot of time. There has been, to the point of orientation, there was a focused effort to create an orientation for me and other members of the board who joined at the time that I did, and quite frankly, it was extraordinarily valuable because to spend hours with key managers getting to the nitty-gritty of an understanding, you can't accomplish that in a committee meeting, you can't accomplish that in a board meeting, and part of the objective, I think, over the long term is that we need to learn how to govern and how to govern as a board. We're trying to gather detail becoming familiar with the managers that we have and understanding what tools we have in place that give us the feedback that we need so that we can begin to operate as a board, as a CEO would be able to function most effectively in this kind of a setting and an environment. Over time, I would agree that we need to examine closely through the compact the structure of the board so that there's a clarity and more of a traditional corporate responsibility, but it's difficult to engage in oversight responsibility here if you're not fully aware of all of the issues that are important for the board to operate and act upon. And but I clearly see it as a transitional state. I think that the recommendation over the long haul makes a whole lot of sense, and I know that the right places are focusing on that because we can't operate and do that at this level. But, thank you for your work and your report, and thank my board colleagues for the work that they've done. We're not finished yet. We're at a place, and your recommendations will be helpful, and we'll get there. Thank you.
Mr. Costa.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I've been here for a year and a half, so I'm a grizzled veteran of this board. But anyway, I'd like to thank both the Tri-State Board Task Force as well as the Board of Trade and the COG for their very thoughtful comments and actually, bringing to light many of these important issues, because I do think it shows that not only that there is a level of interest and also support of what we do from the business community as well as the Council of Governments as well as the state and district levels. So I think that's a very important indication of what WMATA means to this region. I served as an alternate as well as a principal member, and I think one of the things that's, as Dave mentioned, this is a billion-dollar enterprise with very complicated, complex issues that we all face. And I think our committee meetings function as working sessions where we try to work through very complicated issues, whether it's our budget, the service plan, safety issues. And I think the board as a whole represents both different perspectives but different levels of expertise that I think on a case-by-case basis or an issue-by-issue basis, everybody brings something to the table. I think that's important for this agency as we try to make the best decision possible. And I'm supportive of the long-term recommendations, but I also think since everybody is here and everybody brings both perspective in terms of their constituents' needs as well as individual expertise in transit operations like Mr. Dowdy or Mr. Giancola brings a certain engineering expertise and so on and so on to matters that we all have to consider. They bring up issues that we might not have thought about, and I think that's very valuable in terms of how they contribute to the deliberations of the board, but I think ultimately make the best decisions in the interest of our customers.
Yes, Ms. Hampshire Cohen.
I really am the new kid on the block, so I can't speak to my experience as an alternate and how essential we are. But I think it is important that I share the conversations had during my recruitment with former representatives from Prince George's and the current elected officials in Prince George's. And uniformly, what was communicated to me was the concern and sense that Prince George's was underserved by the absence of an active, engaged alternate. And so one of the questions put to me was, while it is an alternate position, you should consider this understanding. We expect you to be at every meeting. We expect you to read all the materials. We expect you to work collaboratively with Alvin Nichols. And so it was really a recruitment of a team. And Alvin and I had that conversation, as well as conversations with Betty Hewlett, who was very adamant in saying it was a major hardship on her personally, as well as a disservice to the county, that we were without two active, engaged members. So on that basis, I agreed to accept this responsibility. I do want to say that I am excited about the transformation of the agency that I'm seeing just in the orientation process, and the fact that the board will be stepping away for a couple of days to have a conversation about vision, I think is going to very much influence and impact, finally, the bylaws that we will come forward with. And it's great work. I've read everything. I now understand the issues probably better than most around the alternate and compensation. And so I'm looking forward to what I think is going to be an invigorated board focused with the community and the elected officials and partners in the compact. Thanks.
Mr. Nichols?
Just one more brief comment. Thank you very much. I won't overstate. But I do want to add one additional point. As we discuss the intensive work that the board is doing, the number of hours, the number of committees, the number of opportunities for engagement, I think there's also an aspiration that I think I personally have, and I think perhaps others have, and that is to get to a less is more state. And I think simply meeting more often with more people doesn't necessarily create a more efficient and a more effective transit system. A lot of our engagement right now is coming from the fact that there are so many new people who need to understand how the system works. Number two, I think there's a part of trying to ensure that our community, our constituencies, have the confidence that we are fully engaged and that we are actually engaged in the process that's going on. And that's very important for the wide range of constituencies. A third element of that is becoming familiar with our senior management, understanding them, developing the collegiality between senior management and the board, and the confidence level that it has to work both ways. I mean, our role is to set policy. It's also to support our senior managers in terms of the execution of the system, and also to develop the confidence, which I am developing strongly, that they know what they're doing. I have been impressed with the senior management of this organization, short period of time, but there's a depth of experience in understanding the system, and so we're learning about each other. But there's a point at which I believe we will be scaling back our day-to-day engagement and operate as a board, and not as an executive management team, so that the staff can feel the confidence that we have in them, that we also have the tools available to us to be satisfied that we're getting the kind of information that we need that will give us the confidence that the execution that we expect to happen is happening, and that our community can at the same time feel the confidence that we're doing that job. And so it's a building process. I know we'll get there. I think we'll get there sooner than later, but it's a long process that I'm excited about. The collegiality between the board is something that's very refreshing to me. It's a great group of people, and I enjoy working with them, but we make no mistakes about how much work we have to do, and it's ahead of us.
If I could add one additional comment, unless somebody over on this side wants to add any more. I would like to reflect on a little bit on what our work actually is. I said in my opening remarks, our job is to set the vision, our job is to provide appropriate oversight, and our job is to figure out the money. And that third one, the figuring out the money, is the one that requires me and Mayor Ewell and artists and other people to go back to the jurisdictions and advocate for those dollars. On Maryland, it's the governor. But I mean, you really need to have the people sitting at the table who have the capacity to bring the dollars to bear. And I think that you can't lose sight of that in this whole conversation either. And whether you're an alternate or a principal, if your jurisdiction's ponying up, you carry a tremendous burden of bringing those dollars to the table. And in Virginia, we have members who are alternates whose jurisdictions are direct payers. So I think that we can't lose sight of that in this conversation either. The further removed you are from the folks who actually pay, the more difficult that annual conversation about the budget, whether you have a five-year budget plan or not. Things happen in jurisdictions, and you need people who can go forward and say, this is so important. I don't think there's a person sitting at this table, and I include all of you and probably everybody in this room, who has any question about the incredible importance of this agency to the economic success of our region. There's no question. We cannot survive I've jokingly said for a while, somebody mentioned to me my first week on the job here, a citizen in Arlington said, you know, all we should do is just have one take your car to work day, and people will understand that our region cannot work without the buses and the metro. Take your car to work day, you know. So I think, no, I don't even have, after I say it and everybody laughs, everybody goes, oh, that would be horrible. So I just want to say we cannot lose sight of that fact. And as we talk about appropriate membership or other things, don't lose sight about who brings the dollars to the table for operating on capital. So, Mr. Downey?
Yeah, I just have to respond to the comment about the second vice chair. which I'm sure was not intended as a comment on the incumbent.
No.
But for the record, it's not a position I campaigned for. I do not view it as an escalator, unless it's like the escalator I used at Metro Center this morning, which wasn't going up. But I do think it is important, and one of the reasons I agreed to do this was to make the point that federal members are full members and taking full responsibility for the health of the agency and the decisions that are made. And I certainly was happy to make the point that while federal members don't have vetoes, can't do other things, that they are part of the governance process and eligible to and comfortable in serving as officers of the authority. So I wouldn't want to lose sight of that. And in the comment from the working group about defining the role for the federal government, I think that would be a useful discussion that you should be having with the federal agencies, but I would not want to view it as a diminished role. And one final footnote, in terms of any compact change, do not forget that the president will have to sign that legislation, so the executive branch has an interest in what's put together.
Mr. Downs? No? All right. So now you've heard from all of us. This is what happens with this committee. I don't know if you all have further comments you want to make around board responsibilities or on the conversation we just had or on the role of the chair, but now would be a great time.
Andy? Well, our comments are, as we were going to go through this on item three,
mm-hmm.
seven, and then you added one. Wow. So this one's going to be on one.
Okay.
When we had a conversation last week with you, Chairwoman, and you, Chair of this committee, it was to talk about the gray areas, and we expressed that concern. It's not crystal clear what's a bylaw. It's not crystal clear what's a policy. It's not always crystal clear what separates the code of ethics. Then at the beginning of this, you had talked about bylaws are cement. And we really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you before the cement sets. Mm-hmm. Our concern on the alternate is that you're already operating completely different than is explicitly specified in the compact. And by calling in Article 1 alternates board members, it goes down the wrong path, not the adjustment. So we're not appealing to general counsel, we're speaking to the board. The compact was explicitly clear that the role of the alternate should only act in the absence of their jurisdiction's members. It's very clear. We're not discounting the value of participating in meetings. We're not discounting at all. We recognize the value of alternates to not only be at the table, but to participate in those discussions. But when we saw in Article 1 a move before the cement sets to call alternates board members, it did bring us to the point of what we had discussed at the task force wasn't, well, let's call them board members. It was actually bring it back to the compact, and then when the compact is reopened, we expect, to adjust it as everyone sees fit. Our recommendation on that, separate from how everyone would see it fit, is we think that one of the alternates should be then made a full member of the board, and that the fourth alternate would be unnecessary in terms of the ability to manage with a full board. But that was just our recommendation. This one's slightly different from a recommendation. We're appealing to you to look at the specific language in the compact and understand that you're already beyond the scope of the compact, we're respectfully recommending that you bring it back to what the compact already states. And instead, our concern is that this Article 1 goes in the opposite direction and quietly begins to make alternate board members board members.
I think, you know, I just in response, my understanding has been in the context of board meetings, and maybe our general counsel can weigh in. I think it would be appropriate because, you know, I've been here 3.5 years, but the idea of alternates participating in committee meetings predated me by some years. And my understanding of the decision at the time was that the committee takes actions, but they're not official actions of WMATA until the board acts on them in the context of a board meeting. And so this might be a little bit semantics, and that's why I was trying to state the understanding of what the committee does versus what the board does. In acting at a committee level, we are only acting to send a recommendation to the board. So no actions of WMATA take place absent the board of directors, meaning, i.e., the principals, voting in a board meeting. And that's been my understanding from the beginning, and I'd ask our general counsel maybe to clarify how we ended up in that situation.
I concur with Mr. McKay's outline or summary of how the compact works. The compact speaks to actions of the board of directors and at the board of directors level. It does not address at all activities of the board at the committee level, because the committee is a creature. The committee structure is a creature of the board, and the compact authorizes the board of directors to create its organizational structure. What cannot happen in the committee is final action of the board of directors. So the compact provides that the board of directors may act by resolution or motion, and the only action that occurs of the board of directors is at the full board level. And at that full board level, the alternates vote only in the absence of their respective principals. So I think we all appreciate what Board of Trade has, the position it has taken. My view is that the Board of Directors now and historically has acted consistent with the compact dictates.
And just to follow up, my understanding always has been consistent with what you heard from many board members this morning, is that the alternates bring a broad range of expertise and experience. The board has recognized that and said, hey, we want to hear from you at the committee level. We want your input. We want you to shape what ultimately will go to the board of directors to be voted on, which then becomes official WMATA policy. And that was a way to better engage the alternates, to value what they bring to the table. But in no way are the alternates acting on something that is officially going to become a WMATA policy or procedure or action unless they're at a board meeting absent a principal member.
Let me just say that when you call the alternates board members, it changes everything in your bylaws, Article 1. And before it gets set in cement, we would respectfully request and encourage the board to call alternate members, and not to call them board members. That then empowers them as board members. That's our central point on this bylaws proposal.
Ask one question, because I need clarity on this before action is taken as well. This does not supersede the compact, which the compact says they will only principal members may vote to make official policies of the WMATA organization. So I guess is it the general counsel's opinion that by putting this in the bylaws of Article 1 that in any way, shape, or form we're trying to supersede that which is written out in the compact? Because the challenge is, and let me just make one other point, the challenge is there's many other areas in here then where it becomes pretty confusing in the bylaws. And we went to the first section and just said, look, let's broadly define these things for simplicity within the bylaws, but in no way does this allow an alternate member to act at a board meeting unless the principal member is absent.
That is correct. There's nothing in the bylaws that is intended to supersede the compact, nor could it supersede the compact legally. I appreciate what you're saying, and we'll take another look and go through the bylaws to see if additional clarity is necessary. As Mr. McKay said, it was really a drafting convenience that we used that approach at the beginning of the bylaws. But we can always look at it again and see if there's any clarity that would address this point. There's nothing in the bylaws that is intended nor can it supersede the compact.
I don't want to belabor it, but since the general counsel is going to go back and look and see how to reflect the language, I'd like her to make sure she looks. We also look back at the appointing authority, because as I recall, and I won't say other than reading, thinking of it, it says that entity appoints board members, one principal and one alternate. So it says board member, and I just would like to understand how all of them reflect that, so that that might be a place of trying to figure out, okay, how do we help? Directors, board of directors, right, directors, right. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Scott.
Yeah, I'm going to change the subject. back to your question about Article 2, that is where we thought it was appropriate to add more specific language about the strategic management of the agency, not just a strategic plan, but really a process. We are going to suggest language. Didn't anticipate wordsmithing today, but you know, we thought that's the area where, you know, it's a board responsibility. We're not suggesting the board do the plan, just approve key elements of it, that, you know, so it's clear that it's the board policy, it's the direction of the agency. There have been a lot of things that have been done on the staff level, but they've just never been blessed by the board, and yeah, they tend to go on the shelf that way.
Okay. That was where I thought it ought to go as well, so that's great. And nothing on Article 3 on the role of the chair from either of you all? No? Article 2, Jim? Yeah.
Article 2, D, 2, regularly attend and participate in board and committee meetings and authority activities that build knowledge, awareness, and support for WMATA. Our task force really did express an enormous amount of concern about regular attendance at meetings. We were using the word regular attendance. It was clear that there was irregular attendance. But as you put bylaws together, we would encourage you, whether it's in bylaws or policies and procedures, to be very specific on that, because regular attendance could mean I show up every 6 months regularly. What is it that you're trying to get? And we understand you're trying to get people to attend. You can pick a percent. You can pick the number of meetings, however you – but with more specificity, it gives the chair the velvet hammer that he or she will need.
I think that's a great comment. And I would note, if you look in Article 3A6, we have included board self-evaluation as a task for the chairman to undertake, and I would expect that in that process, too, we would refine some of our kind of holding each other accountable for attendance and participation. So, it's a great point that perhaps in the procedures we might identify some goals. That's great.
If I may also point out, the working group has discussed the notion, too, in terms of making recommendations on the issue of appointments to the governor and the mayor and the appointing authorities, that attendance be one issue that's kind of on the checklist, with the notion of if we do go to terms, which is something we're also looking at for board members, that both on renewal and appointment, that the topic of both attendance and using the system are two things that we would urge the appointers or the appointing committees to look at, too.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right. So that takes care of 2 and 3 from your point of view. Any particular comments? And then I'd like to just give you the opportunity, if you have comments on communication with the public, which is Article 7 in the bylaws and much more specificity in the procedures. But if you have thoughts there or comments, we would welcome them. Mr. Jenninger?
We commend you for the focus on communicating with the public and caution against going so far that it paralyzes any ability to get things done. So it's a delicate balance and probably most appropriate in the policies and procedures. So we do really respect the willingness and the ability and that commitment to communicate with the public. The public's a pretty big public.
It is. Mr. Scott.
Just two general points. That it's clear that public involvement will be early, you know, that there's time to actually influence what the decisions are, and also to empower the staff to engage in soliciting input, so it's not all the public having to communicate with the board directly, that things, a lot of consensus can be built on the staff level.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess at this point I would throw it open to you if there are any other comments you wish to make, other sections that you want us to be sure we circle back to. We're happy to take any other sort of feedback on the bylaws and the procedures at this point. Mr. Dinner.
Maybe a little bit as it relates to procedural. So now you'll have the policies, procedures, the ethics, perhaps a little bit of an idea on the timeline there. We also know you're waiting on the GAO report, and while we respect the GAO, we hope that they stick to their schedules so that you're not taken off track on things. Last, beyond that, as it relates to the compact, and that's back to the two governors and the mayor and the appointing authorities, what, if any, role do you expect from the board to weigh in on compact amendments?
Those are all great questions. I'll do the ones I know, and others can chime in if they have additional information. The procedures are out for comment and along with the bylaws. So we have a draft. We're taking comment on all of it. Many of the RAC's comments are procedural, so I'm expecting when we come back on June 9th, we're trying to gather all those comments kind of together and organize them so we can work through them in an orderly manner and make adjustments as needed based on what we've heard. So on June 9th, we will also return to the Code of Ethics. We've had one conversation that's a document we need to spend a little bit more time on, so I'm not sure if it will end up being on the same timeline as the bylaws and the procedures. We've all signed the current code of conduct, so, you know, we're covered. It's just we're trying to do some refinements and make sure we all are comfortable, and we've asked counsel to talk to the jurisdictions and line that up in terms of the Conflict of Interest Act and all of our jurisdictions as well. So there's a little bit more work going on there. We are on track, I believe, to adopt the bylaws and the procedures, the board to adopt the bylaws and procedures at our June 23rd meeting. We understand that the GAO is also on track to meet their deadlines, and we're having some conversation with them as well on what their areas of concern are. So while we won't have specific things necessarily by the 9th from them, they're not going to comment on our work. We do have an understanding of the areas that they've focused on and are thinking through those. And quite honestly, I don't think they're terribly different from some of the things that you all have brought up. Everybody has focused on strategic planning, and on roles and responsibilities. Those are the two areas where I think there's been the most attention. So we believe we'll be in a position to adopt in June. As I said, the ethics may follow in July. It may take us slightly longer to get those in shape. And then I'm going to turn it over to our chairman. on the compact issue and other, if you have other information.
I think on the compact issue, I think the board has done really what I think is the appropriate piece, and I think we step back from it. We will have a role in our jurisdictional responsibility, but it truly is a governing us of the jurisdictional piece there. I think as that occurs, as I think was said earlier on about this process, that then that conversation is one that we would hope that you would have at that time. That is, for us to opine at this point as to what we would like to see in the compact, I think isn't the right place to start. I think it needs to start in such a partnership with our jurisdictional folks as they work together at the work group effort there. It is a, well, I'll leave it at that, but that really is where I think it belongs, yeah.
I had one other comment.
Yes, Ms. Evans. I had one other comment because it was raised by, it may have been Andy, in talking about further progress, and it referred to the budget process, and as I had written on my note, and as Ms. Hines was noting, it would be interesting to you that on our consent agenda today is an approval of a budget item that goes forward, and the staff should work for it, how to look at this. So I think it's just a reflection of process and moving through, and I think Mr. Nichols said the transitioning piece of that and where it goes with it, but I think the recognition that the budget process has been a long, treacherous role of trying to get through this every time, and we want it to be really a well-defined process, and I think, as you noted, or as noted, most budgets are built in a collaborative way of their revenue, folks, and that's how you need to deal with them.
Chair, I respect the comments regarding the compact and that you'll work through your respective appointing authorities and the rest. I do think, though, that there are a few issues that transcend the individual responsibilities or even the jurisdictional responsibilities, and a central point of our task force report has been the regional approach. Mm-hmm. So if the board doesn't weigh in on perhaps the appointing and the timing of the appointing, you could end up with dramatic changes of the board based on elections or based on something else. I do think that it's incumbent upon the board as a responsibility to at least share an opinion about how, if they're reopening the compact, it would benefit the entirety of the WMATA operation to consider X, Y, and Z. So I won't go into the particulars of what we think those are. Frankly, I think that that's actually better from the people sitting in your seats. But you know that you know best that there are things that come up from time to time that if you had the magic wand to be able to fix, you could adjust it better. And I think that the respective governors and mayor, as a regional approach, would gain significantly from that input. So I respect the withholding of it, but at the same time, I would encourage some consideration on specific provisions of the compact that would benefit the governance of WMATA.
I appreciate that, and let me just clarify my point, and because I think what has come out of this to me in this entire process has been very valuable. But what has come out of it is a greater communication with our own appointing authorities. That didn't exist as well. And so there could be the opining of something, but in opining, I really think that we don't come from those appointing agencies with a closed mind about what they think, that we really are working as an appointing agency to try and work collaboratively as a region. And that's my point in that I'm sure we all have opinions, but I would hate the opinions to go back framed without there having been any discussion from the regional bodies as to how collaboratively we can get there with some of that. That's the only place I'm coming.
I think I would add to that by saying each of the appointing bodies have also been asked to comment on the work we've done so far. And so I think all of our understanding about what happens at this table, how it relates to our appointing bodies and to the various jurisdictions that we represent has been elevated, and the conversations we're having, I think, are very constructive. So I take your point that there might be principles that this board might say, you know, regardless of what happens, don't lose sight of this or that or the other thing. And maybe that would be something, you know, a month or two from now or 3 months from now, we might be in a position. But I take Ms. Hudgens' point, which is right now we're getting those comments and we're having those conversations, and we might all be in a better position having that as our base to come back to this table and say, you know, for this to work smoothly, for this board to continue to move forward, pay attention to this, as opposed to specifically on section so-and-so make this adjustment. I think you're more likely to get a principled response from us as opposed to a detailed response. So, Mr. Downs.
Beyond bylaws, beyond procedures, there is an assumption on the board that the governing committee is a permanent standing committee of the board, that the agenda is not simply the bylaws and the procedures, but it is the long-term governance of the authority, going beyond the recommendations that you've made that apply to bylaws and procedures. I would give you a challenge back. As we get into serious discussion beyond bylaws and procedures of multi-year business planning, which this authority has not had practically in its history, that requires active participation from all of the jurisdictions and stakeholders about making financial commitments and making them publicly available as part of a planning process beyond what we do now in this short-range Band-Aid approach to budgeting for this authority. I agree with Jim's assertion that we have to think regionally. If we're going to think regionally, we have to think regionally over multiple years, 2, 3, 4 years. We have to do that publicly. We have to do that with support beyond what this board can bring to the table. The business community, the Council of Governments, the regional stakeholders have to agree that there are going to be multi-year processes. Board member Barnes has broached, for instance, the issue of a two-year budget. I can't imagine what the reaction is going to be at the various stakeholder levels about the council and the budget process and the state of Maryland, the local jurisdictions about a two-year budget. But I think having that debate and having the support that comes with a more rational budget process and a more strategic business planning process is essential far beyond what we're doing with bylaws and procedures. It is going to be the toughest work that governance has to deal with, but it also has to be tough work that is dealt with in the region by the business community, by the government leaders, by the jurisdictions themselves. I would say in passing that if this is a regional effort, we all have to ask ourselves why we abandoned the only regional summit that we had, where the political, elected, appointed leadership of the region came together for a day and a half to discuss actual performance and the fiscal framework for this authority going forward. Without that framework, there is no regional dialogue that is open to the press, open to the public, where the serious issues of this authority, its financing, its capital, its operating and its safety, are put on the table and publicly debated, where you can develop some regional consensus. We haven't tackled that yet. It is not a recommendation that anybody has actually made about reestablishing that regional summit. At some point, it's not on the agenda as far as I can tell this year. It's not ours necessarily to be able to construct. We have to have a partnership that gets us there. And we're kind of willing partners, but we can't act too far above our pay grade. to be frank, about how the appointments work and how we are accountable to the appointing authorities. And in that, it's a challenge back. We need a partnership. It's not just a kind of recommendation and reaction. We need an ongoing working relationship about agendas beyond what you've given to us. We will do our best with those agendas through this initial governance process, but we have miles and miles to go yet.
Mr. Downey.
This transformation process actually began when most of the people at this table were not here, and I think it has moved ahead very effectively, and when we can add things like multi-year budgeting and strategic plan, it'll work even better. But the starting assumption when we went on this basis was we as a board want to take this authority as far as we can to become a high-performance organization and not rely on changes that could be imposed from above, which frankly could be positive or negative, and in any case will be expensive in terms of the process that will have to be undertaken to get it through three legislatures, the Congress and the President. So we said, let's get as far as we can, and then let a decision be made. Is it worth the effort to go the next step, or are we where we should be?
Thanks, Mr. Downey. Anyone else? Anyone on the other side of the table? Mr. Scott.
Yeah, and I just want to agree with Mr. Downs on a lot of the points he just made. We're not going into this blindly. We realize what we're suggesting is a lot of work on the jurisdiction's part as well. There's a reason why this hasn't been done. It's hard. And each jurisdiction has unique circumstances, but we think we can do it. Progress was made on the capital program. That was very positive. We need to do the same on the operating. We're definitely here in partnership to work through these issues. As far as going forward, we will keep you informed as we work on compact amendment issues. Keep you informed. You can weigh in. Any kind of compact amendment, if we do it, it's going to require consensus throughout the region, the greater Washington region. It's not easy. But for something to pass three legislatures in Congress and be signed by the President of the United States requires a lot of consensus. So we have a lot more talking to do, and we'll keep you informed as we go forward.
Mr. Robertson.
Just perhaps a quick closing comment, picking up on Mr. Downs' comment. You know, if it would be helpful as these conversations evolve in terms of the larger issues to engage local governments through COG or business leaders through the Board of Trade, we're obviously happy to be part of those that work going forward. We understand that what the board is doing is the things that it can do quickly and easily and grab those and make some progress. The state conversation is ongoing and will, I think, advance some very good issues that there'll be a dialogue, as Ms. Hudgens said, back and forth, because that's how that is going to be solved. But there's obviously the big issues that are out there that really need the multi-year commitment, and we need to do that. And so we are ready partners with you at the appropriate time and place to kick that off.
I want to thank you all for joining us today. We all appreciate the work that you individually and your organizations have put in to help bring us to this point, and we look forward to continuing to be in dialogue and in partnership as we keep improving the work that we're doing here to serve the whole region with a fabulous transportation system. So thank you again very much, and appreciate your coming in today. Thanks. I'm sorry, we're adjourned from this committee, and we'll start with customer service and operations whenever Mr. Wells says.
No.
Oh, JDRE, sorry.
There you go.
Okay, sorry.